listener production.
Hello and welcome to Willow Talk. Adam Peacock here. Hads is over in India, but he's back on next week. We've kind of put him to one side this week to just supercharge him. It's like a Tesla. Just plug him in and then just let him just fester there for a moment. We can get him going. But fester. Sam Ferris here, producer Sam, is with me in the studio. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm festering along opposite you here in the studio. The Tesla's fester.
I don't know. They just charge. Yeah, and charge. Try to come up with another word for charge, but you know that's what Hads is doing. Whatever he's doing it right now over in India with his Punjab Kings.
Yep.
Coming up in this episode, I'm still getting over Maitland Brown, who was sitting in that seat a few days ago, singing through. Can you sing through your mouth?
No, I can barely talk through. Normally, let alone with my mouth shut.
Extraordinary. Adam Zampa, he talks normally and extensively. We've caught up with Adam Zampa from the Outback about sitting out the IPL, the One-Day World Cup win, the upcoming T20 World Cup in the US and Caribbean, and expansive chat about Adam. Mm. He's I wouldn't say he's a different thinker. He's an open thinker.
Yeah.
And I love interviewing people like that. So it's good value. And there's a few sounds as well to accompany soundtrack from Adam Zampa.
Yeah, he's literally about, what do you say, 3 hours west of Bundaberg. So it's close to the middle of nowhere.
Pretty much.
But yeah, lots of birds, a bit of wind. He's doing it outside. It really got exposed to the elements. So he really wanted to give us that Australiana feel. But good chat. Yeah, he's very candid in this chat.
Exactly. And then after Zamps, we're going to be back with the episodes. We've changed it from risers and fallers to extras for one episode, but we've come up with sundries.
Sundries.
Because it's a great word. And I don't like the fact that it's been changed to extras.
You're the boss. So when you told me we've got to change it from extras to sundries, I said, you know, sundries. You call the shots.
Traditionalist.
You don't hear Just sundries anywhere else, do sundries. You?
No.
No.
I can't think of another way. DM us at Willow Talk that you can use the word sundries in a sentence outside cricket.
Unless it's sun dries.
No.
No, doesn't count.
Exactly. Now, before we hear from Zamps, a quick update on our target of 400 Spotify ratings. Where are we at now, Sam?
We're on 373.
Ooh, nice.
Close.
Nice. So if you're listening on Spotify, do us a favour and give us a rating. We're also short of our goal of 150 ratings on Apple Podcasts. We crunched through the century mark not that long ago. We're heading for 150 in search of a double ton. Of course, give us a review and a rating and we will be forever grateful. But as mentioned, Adam Zampa, the special guest on this episode with the flora and fauna 3 hours west of Bundaberg. Here he is, Adam Zampa. Adam Zampa joining us right now. I can hear some birds in the background, which means he's in the bush somewhere. It sounds relaxing, mate. Are you relaxed?
Yeah, definitely. I am currently about 3 hours west of Bundaberg. Yeah, the best idea I could give you is that it's Australia, that's for sure. I'm at a family property in the middle of Queensland, so I'm certainly relaxed. A long way away from civilization and cricket at the moment.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it because a couple of weeks ago the news came through that the IPL wasn't for you in 2024. I don't know if you can release why you came to that decision, but as you sit there right now, you're pretty comfortable with that decision?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be quite honest with you about it. Like, there's several reasons why the IPL wasn't for me this year. I think the most important one was the fact that it's a World Cup year and I'm completely drained from 2023. I did the full IPL last year. Obviously the World Cup was 3 months in India as well. So I had the best intentions of trying to play the IPL again this year. But once push came to shove, I felt like I just couldn't really offer the Rajasthan Royals the best version of myself. And looking forward to the World Cup, that's what's more important to me, that's for sure.
What are the key indicators for you knowing, like you're a cricketer at heart, so you want to play as well as you can wherever you are, but what are the indicators for you that tell you that, oh, maybe this fuel gauge of mine is closer to empty than full and I maybe need to reassess how I'm approaching things?
Yeah, it's the mental capacity for the grind. As cricketers, you kind of get into the grind and it's easy to stay in it. But once it gets to a point where you're at tipping point, which I was, towards the end of cricket season, including, a few little niggles as well, which, basically it came down to my decision being, I probably need to put my body and my mental health first. And then you throw a lot of other things into the equation as well, like the fact that I've got a small family. a young family, I should say, who it's not easy to spend 9 weeks in India in my situation where, you know, I'm fighting for my spot in the team as well. It's not like I can say to myself, well, that's all right, I've got 14 games to prepare for a World Cup. I don't know whether or not that's actually going to be 2 games or 4 games or 6 games. So, you know, I kind of worked out that maybe just a rest, putting my family first, putting my body first was better for me. So it's not an easy decision because you've always got that voice in the back of your mind going, oh, you know, pulling out of the IPL, what are people going to say? What happens the next time you want to go to the IPL? Do people kind of paint you with that brush? But I wasn't too fussed about it once I made that decision. I knew it was the right one.
What's that first week off then like when you're craving a bit of downtime? Is it full daddy daycare duties or is it unwinding in other ways?
Yeah, definitely. That's the other whole thing that you have to consider in this situation is the fact that, you know, our wives, full-time parents, when we're away, they're doing it all by themselves. And in my situation too, my wife's running a property. She's trying to start a business. So for me, it was, a nice opportunity for me to give back to her, be a father, give her time away from the child to kind of concentrate on what she's trying to concentrate on, which was it's been a nice feeling. You know, it's been 5 or 6 weeks now since I've actually been home from that New Zealand tour, so we're well and truly in the swing of dad mode, and it's been nice.
And you've wherever you are, several hours west of civilization there in Queensland, you sometimes flick on the Cricket Australia app in the morning and look at the scores from the IPL and go, hey, look at that. That team went for 270 off 20. It's not the worst IPL to miss at the moment, given how much tap everyone's copping with the ball.
Yeah, my dad actually mentioned that. I went down to the south coast to visit my dad a couple of weeks ago and he said, yeah, it's probably not a bad IPL to miss this one. It seems like it's pretty high score. And I didn't, shy away from the fact that I said, mate, most T20 games are heading that way now anyway, so better get used to it. But, yeah, I've been flicking the scores on every now and then. I'm interested to see how the guys are going. Obviously got some mates, Australian cricketers, who are, interested to see how they're going and tracking for our World Cup crack as well. So, yeah, I'll turn it on.
Yeah, it's not too far from that World Cup. But let's firstly look back at the World Cup that happened. It does feel like 6 years ago, but it was only a little over 6 months ago in India. What burns in the memory for you about that experience and that victory?
Yeah, I think I've said it in the media since then that I still can't wrap my head around it. And still waking up some mornings now, I go, that didn't really happen, did it? Someone like me, I've always felt like I'm a bit of a battler. I'm not the most talented cricketer in the team, that's for sure. If I'll be honest with you, I always feel like I'm probably the least talented cricketer in the Australian cricket team, but I've always had the burning desire to try and stay in the team, do well in the team, and I've never really thought that, you know, winning World Cup was a serious goal until you do it. And we did it a few years ago, and then it was definitely something that I wanted to achieve in India with that team. But once you do it, it's like, this is pretty big. No one gave us a chance, especially after the 2 games. People were writing myself off after 2 games, which was fair enough as well. But, yeah, to lift the trophy at the end and have a party for a few days after was a bloody nice feeling.
I bet. You kept receipts too, I noticed. I mean, who were those receipts from? And in all seriousness, like you can look at it as a cheap way to get motivation, but it is a factor, I'm guessing, as a professional sports person, that can serve as something as a bit of an incentive in some kind of way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a massive Curb Your Enthusiasm fan. A lot of people will know this about me, but I love Larry David. And most of the things that he does in life are out of spite. So I don't know if I'm similar to him, but every time I go on the cricket field, I always feel like there's someone that I'm looking to spite, whether or not it's, you know, someone in the media or just, you know, a memory of my childhood cricket where I was always battling for a spot against the City Boy or something like that. So it's always been, my wife mentioned it to me a few weeks ago. She's like, geez, you need to stop going on the field out of spite. And I'm like, well, it's working for me at the moment. but yeah, the receipts thing is, I don't know, I guess Tom Brady, when he won the Super Bowl a few years ago, he said that he kept some receipts potentially about, you know, people saying he was aging and all that. And then I just had this funny idea after we won the World Cup in 2021 to get a few of the old receipts that journalists, the papers were writing about us, ex-players in particular were saying about us, and say it during the team song after we'd won the World Cup. And it got a good crack. The boys had a good laugh. So I thought, you know, a few years later, we've won another World Cup, why not use the same gag again? And it went down a treat.
Righto then, I'll use a bit of a Larry David because he, I dare say, had a say in how this episode was written in Seinfeld. We go all the way back to Ned Isakoff and the Chinese restaurant that he got banned from, naming names. Can you please name names, Adam Zampa?
Well, the whole gag was around the fact that the boys couldn't ask me who the quotes had come from.
Okay.
And then the funniest part of the whole thing was they'd be like, come on, mate, who the fuck said that? And I'd be like, oh, Steve Waugh. And they'd be like, oh, Tugger. Fuck, mate. Yeah, I think I made up those names when I got asked, but it's just the last World Cup went for so long.
Yeah.
From start to finish, by the time the final had come around, I struggled to find any quotes because they were from 2 months prior.
Yeah, well, things changed, don't they, over that course, and it was the classic case of starting at a certain point but peaking for the performance in the final, which I guess makes it sweeter, and the celebrations have been, we've been well-versed in what Travis Head got up to and Mitch Marsh's little offsider there and getting on with it. But are these things that, I don't know, people listening to this, when they win a park cricket competition playing summer with their mates that they've played with for 20 years from school, they revisit 10 years, 15 years later. Is it similar in a way? It's still at its kind of core, a bunch of mates doing something great, and you'll remember it for the rest of time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for me, like looking back on the teammates in particular and the coaching staff that were involved in that World Cup, I moved to South Australia when I was a young man. Andrew McDonald was someone that I, you know, we moved to South Australia at the same time, and he was kind of someone that I leaned on a little bit, you know, being a young boy who just moved to a new city by himself. Travis Head, I moved in with Travis, and that was an experience in itself. He was, you know, fair to say, a slob of a young man. And, you know, you look through the whole team. Mitch Marsh was my under-19s captain. Josh Hazlewood was, I played under-19s with him. You know, Stoin and I are close mates. You know, Alex Carey, I played a lot of state cricket with. So you go down the whole 11, there's experience with those guys, not in that World Cup in particular, but, you know, once you put all the names together and think about what we've all been through to get to that point, it's pretty amazing. So, yeah, it'll be definitely something that we look back on together. I think, you know, we had the ring presentation a couple months after, and if, you know, the 10-year reunion is anything to go by from that, it's going to be a good night.
I bet. We had Matthew Wade on recently, and he dobbed you in for sabotaging his ski goggles. Have you got something on Matthew Wade now? He's just a T20 gun for hire, and, you know, you don't have to deal with him if you're playing Shield for New South Wales against him, or maybe a bit of Big Bash action against each other. But, yeah, you basically, you have the floor here. You can retort against Matthew Wade and dob him in on something else.
I think you must have put Wadey on the spot there, and he couldn't potentially remember what had happened to those ski goggles, because maybe I've got this wrong, but I do not remember touching his goggles at all. I did see the little video of you guys talking to him, and he'd thrown me under the bus, and I was like, hang on, I don't know if he's got his wires crossed there. But I haven't really got much on Wadey. He's a ripper. We all love playing with Wadey, so hopefully he's not a T20 gun for hire just yet. Still got hopefully another celebration left in him with him.
How's that right thigh of yours going? Have you run out of room just in case you have extra trophies to give to Larry David? And then, like, I mean, are you gonna have one of those wraparound tats that's going to go in the front of your quad to just trophy upon trophy? That's the aim, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it now. I've got Larry David's left and right handful. I reckon I've got a couple of World Cups in me left at least. So if we get maybe one, two, or three more, being positive about that anyway. I think maybe Kramer might be next.
Yeah. Has anyone looked at that tat and gone, who's that, and guessed someone that it's totally not?
No, I think if you know, it's kind of that tattoo. Like if people know it's Larry David, they know it's Larry David. But if they have no idea what it is, they just kind of go, "That's cool."
So you haven't got someone coming up saying, "Why you got George Costanza on your leg there?" So yeah, good. Everyone gets it.
Someone thought I'd got a tattoo of myself in 30 years' time, holding the World Cup trophies, and I was like, "Why would I do that?" It's Larry David. It's quite obviously Larry David.
Yeah, and hopefully for your sake, you don't have the Devon head that Larry David has, and you've got a nice head of hair. So I think you'll hang on to that, mate. So it's all good.
Yeah, I'll be okay. I'll be okay then.
Yeah, there's a reason why I'm wearing a hat. The summer just played. Mate, you played every white ball game for Australia. Were you happy with that? And you mentioned before about you got to the end of it all and basically went time out. So it was obviously physically taxing and also mentally taxing, but are you proud of what you were able to dish out for Australia?
Yeah, I mean, playing for Australia is really important to me. I mean, I've always tried to prioritise it. And as I said to you before, I've always felt like I'm really lucky to be in the position that I'm in. I've worked super hard and, you know, I'm really proud of the job that I've done in the last few years to make it my spot. So I'm not easily going to give up games for Australia, and it's going to be the case for the next couple of years as well. Like I've said to the selectors, the coach, you know, I really want to do my best to try and play every game for Australia. And if that means sacrificing a bit of franchise cricket like I have now, then I will definitely do that. So, yeah, it's important. Those little series that you win in between, the one against New Zealand, West Indies, to be a part of those is really important. But even the West Indies series and the new one-day group moving forward, I felt like it was really important to have some experience around for that too. You know, to see guys like Jake Fraser-McGurk come on, Xavier Bartlett, Spencer Johnson, and win that series as well was like a really important one for me personally to be involved in, just looking forward to the future, potentially playing with a new bunch of young guys as well. So, yeah, I mean, it was a long summer. Getting back from the World Cup was an amazing feeling to have that trophy. But then to, you know, I felt like Big Bash, I might have been on a little bit of a come down from that World Cup and definitely didn't feel like I was at my best for it. And even when I got to a point during that BBL where I was like, all right, I'm up for this now, I wasn't bowling as well as I could have anyway. So looking back on that, a bit disappointed, but to finish the summer the way we did in the white ball stuff for Australia was great. And then now to kind of put my feet up and think about the last 18 months has been really nice. And now I'm getting to that point too where it's, you know, it's getting close to mid-April and I'm starting to, you know, my mind's starting to work towards that World Cup a little bit. I'm already starting to think about it, which is, it's a nice feeling because I've had that break and, yeah, now I'm excited to get ready for it.
How do you approach it? And this is instructional for any spinner, especially young spinners coming through, and you being like basically the first picked, because every white ball team that Australia picks these days needs at least one spinner. So I'm looking at it from an opposition point of view. Let's try and take down Adam Zampa. And with mixed success, some teams have and some teams have just not been able to do it. How do you approach it when you know a team is trying to take you down in your 4 overs or 10 overs allotted in a white ball game for Australia?
The people that I have around me always make my life a lot easier in terms of, you know, whether or not teams are going to try and take me down. Having guys like Josh Hazlewood, Pat Cummins bowling at the other end, naturally you're always going to be a better chance at taking wickets anyway. But, like, I take my planning really seriously, so I always feel like no matter who I'm up against, I'm really well prepared for that battle anyway. And then to have the experience of Dan Vittori, Andrew McDonald, who have seen me bowl so much, throwing ideas at me as well, I always feel like I've got a lot of bases covered. And as you said, sometimes it doesn't work. Like I'll get taken down, and some days I'll have success. But I always feel like no matter what the end result, I'll always be prepared for what happens next time anyway.
You talk of people around you. What about having Andrew McDonald around in your present national team coach as opposed to a JL or a Boof, Darren Lehman? How's it kind of morphed into one thing or another under a new guy?
Boof and JL were similar in the fact that under Boof, I wasn't bowling that well anyway, and I was a young guy trying to work my way into the team. And his approach to coaching was always around the quick bowling. They'd won a World Cup with quick bowling, so I didn't really get to experience his coaching as much. Whereas the difference between JL and Ronnie is that Ronnie's strength is his tactical side, whereas, you know, JL came in at a time where we needed a kick in the ass and we got it, and now we're all really experienced. So Ronnie brings that tactical nous, and he's brilliant at it. His ability to read the game, give advice, and then give feedback as well is his strength. It is with me anyway. He was a really good player of spin. I remember bowling to him when I was a young guy, so he's got a good lens on it. And then, you know, he's close with Dan Vittori, and he's got Dan in a couple of years ago, who, you know, is one of the best spin bowlers to have played the game in all three formats as well. So I've got two really good guys there who I can lean on, and it's been great to have that. Like, I had Shree, who was working under JL and who was great for me tactically. So to work under three, you know, really good tactical coaches in the last 4 or 5 years has been a massive reason why I feel like I am where I am.
Could you ever see yourself coaching, or do you think trying to kind of think for 15 other people at the one time is just simply an idiotic thing to do with your time?
If you'd asked me when I was a young guy, I definitely would have said, hell no, get me away from cricket. But the older I get and the more of an impact I see people like Andrew and Daniel have on players and the way they kind of have impacted me, I think maybe my thoughts have changed. I don't know if head coaching would be my kind of thing, but I would love to get to a point where someone like Tanvir Sanger would feel like he can call me and lean on me to help out. You know, I really like the nous of spin bowling, and working with young spinners is something that I'd potentially be keen on looking at one day if they wanted to, as I said. But yeah, definitely not head coaching. I'm sick of travelling, mate. You know, by the time cricket's done, I reckon I would love to give up my frequent flyer points.
Yeah, you'll have a few though. Can I have them? T20 World Cup, let's get to that now. So you've played in the Caribbean Premier League, you've played 13 internationals for Australia in the Caribbean. Take us into your kind of preparation for how those decks are going to play for your skill set.
The Caribbean's always an interesting place to play because you don't know what you're going to get wicket-wise. They can be really low and slow. They can absolutely rag. And then some of those night games, the wickets can be really good. I remember playing some CPL games where the ball would get hit along the grass and you'd literally see the water flicking up beside the ball. So Drew can play a massive part at night games there. So, yeah, I mean, it's great to have experience there. I think I've had two tours there plus two CPLs, so I kind of know, you know, the ground dimensions and the wickets over there pretty well. So, yeah, for me, it's I think with the Australian cricket team, it's really nice to know, you know, my role is pretty clear. It's going to be get wickets through the middle and then potentially holding myself back for one to bowl later in the inning. So, yeah, kind of got my head around that already. And as I said, I'd like to be really well prepared, so be doing a little bit of work behind the scenes to make sure I'm leaving no stone unturned.
Just before I get back to the T20 World Cup preps, just looking at your teams played for, so give us a number one seed out of the social setting. What's the number one seed, the best one, out of Caribbean Premier League, Indian Premier League, Big Bash League, the 100? you're a professional, so you prefer to skip that.
No, that's fine. I don't mind that question. It's just there's going to be different times of my life that will pop up when I'm thinking of memories of these competitions. I'm going to have to say, I mean, the 100 is great. I love playing cricket in England. And last year I was lucky enough to play for the Oval Invincibles, and playing at the Oval in front of a packed crowd on a Friday night doesn't get much better. I reckon looking back on my Big Bash career, the first couple of years I played at the Melbourne Stars when we had KP, we had Eddie running the show. We used to do season launches. We all get dressed up in suits and carry on like pork chops. That was, you know, we used to run around Melbourne thinking we owned the place, and that was yeah, I got pretty fond memories of those times as well.
Well, you basically did because you had Ed in charge. So Eddie Maguire, what was he like as a, I don't know, a mentor, a bundle of enthusiasm? He's enthusiastic about everything, Ed. He goes down the bakery. He's enthusiastic about buying his daily bread. So what's a memory of having him in charge and trying to get the most out of the Stars and get as many people to the game because that was what it was about for him?
Yeah, I mean, they were great memories. He didn't show his face a hell of a lot, but when he did, you know, it was energizing. It was, here, guys, here's a rooftop, have a good night. This is a season launch. Yeah, he used to get up and make speeches and get everyone pumped up. Then he'd show his face after the game and, you know, make you really feel like you were part of a rock star franchise. You know, here's a bus with your faces on it. Here's a private jet with your face on it. Nah, that didn't really happen, but like he could have almost got us there. But yeah, playing at the Stars when Eddie was involved was really special. Playing under, you know, Stephen Fleming as well, who, you know, rocked up at the same time as I did at the Stars. Kevin Peterson was there. We used to get some absolute superstars in of world cricket. So be involved then when Eddie was around was, yeah, as I said, fond memories of that.
Big Bash going okay in your opinion? Or as a player, how would you maybe push it forward a little more?
Big Bash is going okay in my opinion, yeah. I believe that it kind of dropped off for a couple of years there. And even last year, and this is going back to what I said to you earlier, I probably rocked up and wasn't as up for it as I could have been and then wasn't doing as well as I should have been. I remember thinking, you know, this feels a lot better. I guess in terms of working forward and continuing to improve Big Bash, I mean, the overseas signing news that they announced the other day, I think, is a really positive step forward. It's just going to be how clubs use that. And then, I mean, the battle against South Africa T20 is always going to be an issue, and then the IL T20 to be up front, basically, whether or not we can pay the best overseas players long enough to and enough money to stay with us for long enough.
So we got railroaded there. Back to the T20 World Cup and winning another one and giving Larry another trophy to hold on your leg there. What gives you the confidence that the team has got enough depth and they've got the mix right to give it a shake again?
I think looking back on the last two World Cups that we've won anyway, it's just experience that I think gets you over the line in games that look like they could go either way, really. I think you look back at the World Cups, Matthew Wade stalling us in the middle, winning us games purely and simply just because I think they'd been there and done it before. And they're just two examples of guys who I think, you know, I've got a lot of experience now, but you add into the mix guys like Tim David, who's playing a lot of T20 cricket, and then the top three, you know, playing really well as well. So, and then the bowling attack, as I said, just really a lot of experience, played a lot together. And I don't know, something about sitting in the change room with the Australian cricket team in big games, it's quite a comforting feeling. You always look around and go, there's someone in who's going to stand up today, which is amazing. It was the same during the one-day final in India. It was like, remember having the goosebumps and the butterflies about to walk out and walking out and going, it's pretty cool to be walking out with someone today who's potentially going to win us a World Cup, and Hedy did it.
Happened to be that slob you used to live with down there in Adelaide, huh? He's come a long way.
The same slob won us the World Cup who left lasagna in the fridge for about 18 months.
No. What colour was it?
Tinge of green, I reckon.
Ooh, tinge.
Eddie's the type of bloke to leave lasagna in the fridge for 18 months and then instead of just throwing out the lasagna, he'll throw out the fridge.
Just terrific. Just terrific. You won't be going to the US for the T20 World Cup. You're going back for the Major League Cricket, though, this year?
No, I'm not this year. I've highlighted the World Cup as kind of my priority. And then, as I said, loved the 100. I don't think I could fit both in. So I've decided to play the 100 as a little bit of a precursor to another tour in England, which we have straight after. I think we were scheduled on a Guinness tour of Ireland, which I think's been cancelled, and now we're hoping that a whiskey tour of Scotland gets organised. Mm. So waiting to hear on that one.
Sounds like a golf tour, actually. So that's a shame about the Major League Cricket because it means you'll have to hang up the old 420 on on the hook. So we were pontificating on Willow Talk 420, why you choose that. And innocent Brad Haddon, country boy, you know, brought up in Queanbeyan and all that, he goes, oh, well, it's maybe just a lighthearted joke about 420 pies, whatever. But me, and this is probably more about me than anything else, I went, well, I think it's actually got to do with April 20. So can you just enlighten us? And I'm not sure Cricket Australia would allow you to wear the 420, but anyway.
I can clarify that Habs is a long way off the mark. That's all I can say.
Again. Fair enough. I'll leave that right there. And anyone who has no idea what we're talking about, don't worry about it. Just on that tour of England, though, you'll play your 100th one-day international over there. That's a pretty proud milestone for you.
Yeah, definitely. It doesn't really happen that often these days either to play 100 ODIs. You look back, you know, when I was watching ODI cricket and you see guys play 200, 250 games for the Australian cricket team, it just with, you know, the scheduling and the amount of one-day cricket we actually play, not many guys reach that milestone. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be a proud moment. As I mentioned earlier, a couple of times I still can't believe I've played this much for Australia. I still pinch myself that I'm in the Australian cricket team. To be able to get to 100 ODIs, it's definitely a goal that I've set myself at one time in my career. So to get there is, that's a massive milestone. I'm bloody excited.
Absolutely. 99 ODIs and 80 T20s. So the 100th T20 is around the corner as well. So congratulations on those numbers, mate. It's awesome. What about, though, have you at any point in the last 5 years, have you thought, yeah, the white ball stuff's going really well, but should I pivot a bit and maybe make a run at the red ball stuff as well? It's hard now with Shield cricket bumping into things like tours of England like this year and the like, but have you ever thought about that and what the test ambitions might be for you?
Yeah, I've always been, you know, whenever asked in the media or, you know, if it's ever been brought up to me, I've always been quite honest about where I feel like I sit in the scenario. To get a bag of green as was always a dream of mine as a child, and it's just not worth enough for me to give up what I'm doing now in the white ball team. Never has come across my mind to be like, I really want a bag green that much that I'm going to give up what I'm doing in the white ball team. And being a part of the white ball team means you don't get to play Shield cricket. So any conversations I've had with selectors or been asked in the media, it's always like, well, I feel like what I've done in the white ball team is potentially good enough to maybe get me a crack. And it hasn't been so far. I feel like maybe it's been close a couple of times to maybe getting on a couple of tours, particularly that Indian one last year. But I feel like I've always been a really honest reflector on my game, and I feel like I can see what cricket is. And watching that test series in India, I thought, I don't think it was for me.
Mm.
You know, you watch finger spinners do really well. You don't see a lot of wrist spinners in test cricket anymore. And I remember being a bit disappointed that I wasn't on that tour because I still had that burning desire. But then you watch guys like Matt Kuhneman and Gaz and Murph bowl finger spin and get the reaction out of the wicket that they could. I just thought, you know, it's fair enough that I'm probably sitting at home and not over there. Yeah, as I said, feel like I can be pretty honest with you about that. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of moving forward, it's going to be the same. If I can get on a tour from my white ball performances, then great. But if not, I'm certainly not going to give up, yeah, what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm being silly with this comment, but, you know, winning World Cups, you know, if I could end up with my career with a few World Cups under my belt and I don't end up with a baggy green, I think I'd take that over playing one test match for Australia.
Fair enough. And you sound like a guy who's always going to always find spots in the calendar to prioritise normal life and being a dad and being a husband and being on the property as well. You're a farmer there, are you? Or is it just a nice little hobby place at the back of the Byron Bay hinterland there?
If I could change the property into a size that made it into a hobby farm, that'd be great. But I think 70 acres probably makes it just out of that hobby farm zone. So
that's big enough.
Yeah, it keeps me on my toes, that's for sure.
Mm.
And yeah, it was a great move when I did it. I did it, you know, around COVID. It was a change of lifestyle, that's for sure. And it was kind of a risk at the time. But yeah, I've never looked back. I love my property. I love that lifestyle. I love the fact that I can shut the gate, get away from the game, get away from all those responsibilities, and then, you know, that's my life. And then once I leave the gate to go on tour, I feel like I, you know, can get that balance right. And so far it's worked out really well.
Who's got the better balance or ability to look after rural pasture, yourself or Pat Cummins?
I've got a feeling I might win this one. I don't know. I've got a feeling that Paddy might outsource a lot of his help, I think.
You're being very careful with your words about the captain there, and I can understand why.
Well, he's never invited anyone over, not that I know of anyway. But every time he shows me a photo of his orchard, it's looking really good. And I go, when was the last time you were in the orchard? And I kind of think I know the answer. Was probably 6 months before the photo was shown to me. So I don't know who's working hard on that property, but I don't know if it's coming.
Mate, all we can do in life is look after our own backyard. So you're obviously pretty happy with what's going on in your backyard. Good luck with whatever's coming around the corner with the cricket and enjoying yourself away from cricket. And really appreciate your time on Willow Talk, mate. Good luck for the T20 World Cup.
Beautiful. No worries. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Well, that went down places I didn't think it was going to go down. Certainly, when we do an interview here on Willow Talk, you give me a bit of a guide about it. We discuss a few things. I throw a few things at you, but in general spec, you give us a guide. But yeah, there were a few things that came up there that weren't on that sheet that you kind of just go down. What did you take out of that one?
The lasagna story?
Yeah.
Travis Head.
It's an interesting play, wasn't it, from Travis Head?
He'd rather throw out the fridge along with the green tinged lasagna. Yeah, didn't see that one coming. But yeah, just talking about his general fatigue from 2023, which is why he's pulled out of the IPL. I thought that was very interesting. And he's a realist, I think, Adam Zampa. And he said, you know, I'm not going to give up any white ball opportunity to pursue a test match baggy green. A lot of players probably wouldn't want to make that call, but sounds like he has.
Yeah, because usually when you think of players who go, oh, I'm not really targeting a baggy green, it's, oh, you're on the gravy train, T20 gravy train, international cricket, white ball. He's not, because he's given up the IPL, so you can't accuse him of that.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously targeting the 100, but really prioritising, as much as maybe someone would pursue a baggy green, how much he prioritises white ball cricket for Australia. I haven't heard many cricketers talk like that.
I wonder if that's one thing that we'll look at in 20 years, and we'll talk about international caps, not just baggy greens, because he's nearly played 200 games for Australia and he won't play any test matches by the looks of it, but that's still an incredible achievement to represent Australia that many times and lead to so many wins and World Cup wins. So the way the game is moving, it's not all about test matches these days, and Adam Zampa is at the forefront of that. Also liked that he told us that if he does win another World Cup, who the next character will be on his leg or next tattoo, Kramer.
Yeah.
I thought he would have gone with George Costanza because that is Larry David.
True. He's already Seinfeld. Got one Larry David, so he's decided to go Kramer, which is fair enough.
Who thought that he'd do a tattoo of himself in the future? That's ridiculous.
Wouldn't have thought so. No. Sundries, let's get into it. Was Extras, now Sundries, recording this before the Rajasthan-Gujarat match, but Rajasthan still on top. Joss Butler, brilliant century against RCB. And Virat Kohli scored his 8th IPL 100, but it didn't bowl everyone over with the way it was made, Sam.
Yeah, ridiculous, really. I mean, you score a T20 100, it's a pretty fair effort, but that was his 8th in the IPL, but the equal slowest in the competition. He scored 800s, 5 have led to wins. The last two have been in losses. Been a bit of a question mark around his place in the T20 World Cup squad for India, which I find kind of absurd as the greatest white ball player ever. But
you can get it because there's so many young players coming through who can slap 135 balls, 40 balls. But who we're talking about here?
He's the king. Yeah. He's the king. And Brian Lara, the prince, came out and said he's just more to the team than a strike rate. So get him in there. And I kind of think that the ICC would have a bit of a conniption if the biggest and most popular cricketer on the planet didn't get picked for the T20 World Cup.
Not happening. You're trying to do this as a growth exercise for cricket, and it's like holding an athletics carnival almost without taking Usain Bolt in his prime.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not in his prime for T20 cricket, Virat, but he's got ways of finding it again.
As if you're not petrified seeing him at the other end of the wicket.
Yeah. Exactly. County cricket, start of the county season, always early April, always damp, so it proved yet again. But we mentioned on the last episode, Sam Northeast's unbeaten 335 against Middlesex at Lords. It's fair to say, though, that Middlesex got a handle on conditions themselves, Samuel.
They did, because I don't think they have first innings points over there the way the point system works, but they had a first innings lead by scoring 655 to take a lead of 35 with a couple of overs to go. The match was obviously a draw. One of the great images from the game, though, the pitch wasn't in the middle of Lords, it was onto the side, so that might explain the high score. It would have been a really short boundary there. They had eight of the fielders in front of the wicket in a ring, old school. Yeah. Kanga cricket kind of stuff.
So have we got a name for this? Like you've got the old name of the umbrella field.
Yeah.
I'm going to name this the salad bowl field. It's just a big wide thing that you can fit lots of wholesome food in. And yeah, you have a look at the picture and you've got it here in the sheet in front of us. It's basically 1, 2, 3, 4 in a conga line from like a silly mid on.
Yep.
All the way around to just in front of square, and it's exactly the same on the offside.
I like the salad bowl. That's good.
Salad bowl?
Yeah.
Go with that. We've got the rose bowl, we've got the salad bowl.
Yeah, there's another bowl coming up as well.
Yes, there is. the Aussies didn't do much, though, in the opening round, Sam, but Harry Brook showed his class yet again. It's a shame he did miss the India tour for personal reasons, but he's hit the ground running this county season.
You forget we had Adam Voges on last week and we're talking about his fantastic test match average. He sits number 3 overall for highest batting averages after 20 tests, I think it is. Number 2 is Harry Brook.
Mm.
He's had an incredible start to his test career and missed that India tour. Back playing county cricket for Yorkshire, scored 100, not out off 69 balls, was doing all the ramps and the laps and just crunched. I think it 14 fours and 2 sixes.
It's only 2 balls slower than Virat Kohli in an IPL game.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, so he's in big form already over there at the start of the season. Then they've got 6 test matches. They've got the Windies first, and then they've got Sri Lanka either side of the 100. I was thinking about this the other day. How many runs, if he plays all 6 test matches, can we put down for Harry Brook?
I reckon you draw your line at 600.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
just an even 100 per game and see where it falls. If, you know, we don't know what the Windies can serve up in those conditions. They can be dangerous with their pace attack if everyone's fit. But, yeah, I'd start at 600. What about yourself?
I think that's a good starting spot because, the attacks aren't as great as they used to be for the Windies and Sri Lanka. And those games in August and September, conditions a bit like now, they're going to start to swing and seam and do a little bit more. So those batting attacks or batting lineups for Sri Lanka might be under the pump, and we probably won't see 2 innings a test from some of those English guys.
Now, speaking of England and speaking of seaming and swinging, they're going to head to New Zealand. 3 test tour of New Zealand, November, December this year, which is great for our time zone and our cricket viewing habits. First match, Christchurch, November 28th, then the Basin Reserve on December 6th, and then Hamilton on December 14th. And you can go for it, Sammy. You can name it because you've come up with this and I love it. I absolutely love it, what we're going to call the trophy that they're going to play for.
Now, if you've been listening to this program at all in the past 12 months, you'll know that Bradley Haddon isn't the biggest fan of New Zealand or England, particularly their cricket team. So we've dubbed this one the Brad Haddon Bowl.
Yes. I'm wholeheartedly agreeing with you here.
For the team that he dislikes the most. While one team will lift the trophy, there are no real winners of this title.
just moral ones.
Just moral winners, yeah. You know, England's already got that one wrapped up. But it's going to be a great test match. Remember they played at the start of the baseball era, I think it was, and New Zealand pinched a 1-run win when Jimmy Anderson tickled, I think it was Wagner, down the leg side.
Yep. Yeah.
So
incredible test.
Incredible test match. These two teams are some of the best in the world. Very important on World Test Championship points as well. And as you said, it's a great time zone for in Australia.
Yep.
It's the best. 9 o'clock start. Can't beat it.
Ben Stokes gets to go home again. Great. What we should do, though, is get an actual trophy made with maybe Brad's face on it. You know, those old cricket trophies you get. It was the generic bloke playing a cover drive. Try and get one with Brad's head on it off one of the trophy makers around the place and then put on it the Brad Haddon Perpetual Bowl or whatever it is.
Yep.
Then under it, just have it's the moral victory that counts. Yeah. Just under it.
Well, I have two winners.
Inscribed.
Yeah. England and then England.
No one can win it and no one can lose this trophy. Yep. So that's the main thing. That's us for this week for Willow Talk, I think, Sam.
That's us. I have been speaking to Hads. Mm. He is charged. He is festering over there and he is fired up. He wants to come and make an impact next week.
Hope you enjoyed Adam Zampa. If you missed it earlier in the week with Heels and Maitland Brown, do yourself a favour and go and listen to it, especially Maitland singing the Mary Poppins song. It's just amazing. Have a great weekend, everyone.